think I liked you better when you were a little more compliant.
Yeah, I bet.
Lena stepped out from behind John. What happened? Is your aunt okay? She seemed like my Lena again, kind and concerned, but I didn't trust her anymore. A few minutes ago, she was taking down the women she hated and everyone else in the tent with them, and now she was the girl I kissed behind the ticket booth. It didn't add up.
What were you doing back there? How could you help them?
I didn't realize how mad I was until I heard myself yelling, but John did. He slammed his palm against my chest, and I stumbled back.
Ethan!
Lena was scared. I could tell that much.
Stop. You don't know what you're doing. Like you said, at least I'm finally doing something. Do something else. Get out of here. You can't talk to her like that. Why don't you get out of here before you get hurt?
What had I missed? Lena had walked away from me barely an hour ago, and now John Breed was defending her like she was already his girlfriend.
Yeah? You should be careful who you push around, Castor Boy. Castor Boy.
He took a step closer to me, curling his hands into fists. Big fists.
Don't call me that.
What should I call you? Dirtbag? I wanted him to hit me. He lunged at me, but I threw the first punch. I'm stupid that way. I released all the frustration and anger I'd been holding inside the second my soft human fist made contact with his steel, supernatural jaw. It was like hitting cement. John blinked, his green eyes turning as black as coal. He hadn't felt a thing.
I'm not a caster.
I had been in my share of fights, but none of them could have prepared me for what it felt like to be hit by John Breed. I remembered watching Macon and his brother Hunting fighting, their incredible strength and speed. John barely moved, and my back hit the ground. I thought I was going to pass out.
Ethan! John, stop!
Lena was screaming, black makeup running down her face. I heard John slam Link into the dirt. To his credit, Link got up faster than I did, only he was back down again faster, too. I picked myself up off the ground. I wasn't that banged up, but I was going to have a hard time hiding the bruises from Amma.
That's enough, John.
Ridley tried to sound cool, but her voice had an edge, and she looked scared. As scared as Ridley could look. She grabbed John's arm.
Let's go. We've got somewhere to be.
Link looked her right in the eye, which took some effort, considering he was lying in the dirt.
Don't do me any favors, Rid. I can take care of myself.
I can see that. You're a real golden glove. Link winced at the dig, or maybe it was the pain. Either way, he wasn't used to being the one on the ground in a fight. He pushed himself to his feet and held up his fists, ready to go again.
They're the fists of fury, baby, and they're just getting started.
Ridley stepped between John and Link.
No, they're finished.
Link dropped his hands, kicking the dust.
Yeah, well, I could take him if he wasn't a... What the hell are you, man?
I didn't give John a chance to answer, because I was pretty sure I already knew.
He's some kind of incubus.
I looked at Lena. She was still crying, her arms hugging her waist, but I didn't try to talk to her. I wasn't even sure who she was anymore.
You think I'm an incubus? A demon soldier?
John laughed. Ridley rolled her eyes.
Don't be such a show-off. No one calls incubuses demon soldiers anymore.
John cracked his knuckles.
I'm old school.
Link looked confused.
I thought all you vampire dudes had to stay inside during the day. And I thought all you hillbillies drove Trans Ams with Confederate flags painted on the hoods.
John laughed, but it wasn't funny. Ridley stayed between them.
What does it matter to you, Shrinky Dink? John's not really a rules kind of guy.
He's sort of unique. I like to think of him as the best of both worlds. I had no idea what Ridley was talking about, but whatever John Breed was, she wasn't saying.
Yeah, I like to think about him as crawling back to his own world and staying out of ours.
Link talked tough, but when John looked at him, all the color drained out of Link's face. Ridley turned to John.
Let's go.
They turned back to the Tunnel of Love, the cars still making the loop under the old wooden arch, painted to look like some bridge in Venice. Lena hesitated.
Lena, don't go with them.
She stood there for a second, like she was thinking about running back into my arms. But something was stopping her. John whispered to her, and she climbed into the plastic gondola. I looked at the only girl I'd ever loved. Black hair and golden eyes, instead of green. I couldn't pretend the gold didn't mean anything. Not anymore. I watched the car disappear, leaving Link and me behind. As banged up and bruised as the day we had taken on Emery and his brother on the playground in fifth grade.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Link was already walking away. It was dark now, and the lights from the Ferris wheel flashed as it turned.
Why do you think he was an incubus?
Link was taking comfort in the fact he had gotten his ass kicked by a demon, not some regular guy. His eyes went black, and it felt like I was hit by a 2x4.
Yeah, but he was walking around during the day, and he's got those green eyes, like Lena's...
He stopped, but I knew what he was about to say.
Used to be?
I know. It doesn't make sense. Nothing about tonight did. I couldn't shake the way Lena had looked at me. For a second, I was sure she wasn't going to follow them. I was thinking about Lena, but Link was still talking about John.
What was all that crap about the best of both worlds? What worlds? Creep and creepier?
I don't know. I was sure he was an incubus.
Link rotated his shoulder, assessing the damage.
Whatever he is, that dude's got some serious superpowers. I wonder what else he can do.
We turned the corner near the exit of the Tunnel of Love. I stopped walking. The best of both worlds. What if John could do a lot more than rip like an incubus and beat the two of us to a pulp? He had green eyes. What if he was some kind of caster, with his own version of Ridley's power of persuasion? I didn't think Ridley could influence Lena by herself, but what if John was helping her? It would explain why Lena was acting so crazy, why she'd looked like she wanted to come with me until John whispered in her ear. How long had he been whispering to her? Link hit my arm with the back of his hand.
Hey, you know what's weird?
What?
They haven't come out.
What do you mean?
He pointed to the exit of the Tunnel of Love.
They didn't get off the ride.
Link was right. There was no way they could have come out before we turned the corner. We watched as the gondolas kept coming out empty.
Then where are they?
Link shook his head, all tapped out of insight for now.
I don't know. Maybe the three of them are doing something kinky in there.
We both winced.
Let's check it out. There's no one around.
Link was already halfway to the exit. He was right. The cars kept coming out empty. Link hopped over the gate around the ride and ducked into the tunnel. Inside, there was a little space on either side of the track, but it was tricky to walk by the moving cars without getting hit. One of the cars caught Link in the shin.
There's no one in here. Where could they have gone?
They couldn't have disappeared.
I remembered the way John Breed ripped out of Macon's funeral. Maybe he could, but Ridley and Lena couldn't travel. Link ran his hands along the walls.
You think there's some kind of secret caster door in here or something?
The only caster doors I knew about led to the tunnels. the underground labyrinth of passageways that slept quietly under Gatlin and the rest of the mortal world. It was a world within a world, so different from ours that it altered both time and distance. But as far as I knew, all the entrances to the tunnels were inside buildings. Ravenwood, the Lunae Libri, the crypt at Greenbrier. A few sheets of painted plywood didn't qualify as a building, and there was nothing under the Tunnel of Love except dirt. A door leading where? This thing is sitting in the middle of the fair. They just set it up a couple of days ago. Link inched his way back out of the tunnel. Where else could they have gone? If John and Ridley were using their powers to control Lena, I had to find out. It wouldn't explain away the last few months or her golden eyes, but maybe it would explain what she was doing with John. I've gotta get down there. Link had already pulled the keys out of his back pocket. How'd I know you were gonna say that? He followed me to the beater, the gravel crunching under his sneakers as he jogged to keep up. He yanked the rusty door open and slid behind the wheel. Where are we going? Or am I better off? He was still talking when I heard it, the tiny words tugging at the bottom of my heart. Goodbye, Ethan. They were gone. The voice and the girl. Like a soap bubble or cotton candy or the last silvery sliver of a dream. June 15th. Unmistakable. The beater skidded to a stop in front of the Historical Society, the front tires halfway up the curb, the engine dying out on the empty street. Can you take it down a notch? Someone's gonna hear us. Not that Link ever drove any differently. Still, we were parked only a few feet from the building that served as the DAR headquarters. I noticed the roof had finally been rebuilt. It had blown off in Hurricane Lena, a few days before her birthday. Though Jackson High had been hit by the same storm, I guess those repairs could wait. We had our priorities around here. Almost everyone in South Carolina was related to a Confederate, so joining the Daughters of the Confederacy was easy. But to join the DAR, you needed a bloodline going back to someone who fought in the War for American Independence. The problem was the proof. Unless you were an actual signer of the Declaration of Independence, you had to establish a paper trail a mile long. Even then, you had to be invited, which required sucking up to Link's mom and signing whatever petition she happened to be passing around. Maybe it was a bigger deal down here than up north, like we needed to prove we had all fought for the same side in a war once. The mortal part of our town was just as confusing as the caster one. Tonight, the building looked empty.
It's not like there's anyone around to hear us. Until the demolition derby ends, everyone we know is at the fairgrounds.
Link was right. Gatlin may as well have been a ghost town. Most folks were still at the fair or at home on the phone reporting the details of a certain southern crusty bake-off that would go down in history for decades to come. I was pretty sure Mrs. Lincoln wouldn't have let any of the DAR members miss watching her try to beat Amma out of first place in pies. Although, right about now, I bet Link's mom was wishing she had stuck to pickled okra this year.
Not everyone. I was out of ideas and explanations, but I knew where we could get some of both. You sure this is a good idea? What if Marion's not here?
Link was jumpy. The sight of Ridley hanging out with some kind of mutant incubus wasn't bringing out the best in him. Not that he had anything to worry about. It was pretty clear who John Breed was after, and it wasn't Ridley. I checked my cell. It was almost 11.
It's a bank holiday in Gatlin. You know what that means. Marion should be in the Lunae Libri by now.
That's how it worked around here. Marion was the Gatlin County head librarian from 9 in the morning until 6 at night every weekday. But on bank holidays, She was the head caster librarian from 9 at night until 6 in the morning. The Gatlin Library was closed, which meant the caster library was open, and the Lunai Library had a door leading into the tunnels. I slammed the door of the beater as Link pulled a maglite out of his glove box.
I know. The Gatlin Library's closed and the Caster Library's open all night long on account of most of Marion's clients don't come around during the day.
Link waved the flashlight across the building in front of us. A brass placard read, Daughters of the American Revolution.
Still, if my mom or Mrs. Asher or Mrs. Snow found out what was in the basement of their building...
He was holding the heavy metal flashlight like he was brandishing a weapon.
You planning to take someone out with that thing?
Link shrugged.
Never know what we're gonna find down there.
I knew what he was thinking. Neither one of us had been back to the Lunai Library since Lena's birthday. Our last visit had been more about danger than dictionaries. Danger and death. We did something wrong that night. And some of it had happened right here. If I had gotten to Ravenwood earlier, if I had found the Book of Moons, if I could have helped Lena fight Seraphine, if we had done one thing differently, would Macon be alive right now? We made our way around to the back of the old red brick building in the moonlight. Link shined his flashlight on the grating near the ground, and I crouched down next to it.
Ready, man?
The light was shaking in his hand.
Whenever you are.
I reached through the familiar grating built into the back of the building. My hand disappeared, as always, into the illusionary entrance of the Lunai Library. Nothing much in Gatlin was what it first appeared to be, at least not where casters were concerned.
I'm surprised that spell still works.
Link watched as I pulled my hand back out of the grate, as good as new.
Lena told me it's not a hard one. Some kind of hiding spell Larkin cast. Ever wonder if it could be a trap?
The flashlight was shaking so badly the light was barely shining on the grating.
Only one way to find out.
I shut my eyes and stepped through. One minute I was standing in the overgrown bushes behind the D.A.R., and the next I was inside the stone stairwell leading down into the heart of the Lunai Library. I shivered when I crossed the charmed threshold into the library, but not because I felt anything supernatural. The shiver, the wrongness, came from not feeling anything different at all. Air was air on either side of the grate, even if it was pitch black. I didn't feel magical right now, not anywhere in Gatlin or beneath it. I felt bruised and angry, but hopeful. I had been convinced Lena had feelings for John, but if there was a possibility I was wrong, that John and Ridley were influencing her, it was worth being on the wrong side of the grate again. Link stumbled through the doorway after me and dropped his flashlight. It clattered down the stairwell in front of us, and we stood in the dark until the torches lining the steep passageway lit themselves one by one.
Sorry, that thing always throws me off.
Link, if you don't want to do this... I couldn't see his face in the shadows. It took a second before I heard his voice in the dark.
Of course I don't want to do this, but I gotta do it. I mean... I'm not saying Rid's the love of my life. She's not. That would be crazy. But what if Lena was telling the truth, and Rid wants to change? What if Vampire Boy is doing something to her, too?
I doubted Ridley was under anyone's influence except her own, but I didn't say anything. This wasn't just about Lena and me. Ridley was still under his skin in a bad way. You don't want to fall in love with a siren. Falling for a caster was rough enough. I followed him down into the flickering, torch-lit darkness of the world beneath our town. We left Gatlin for the caster world, a place where anything could happen. I tried not to think back to a time when that was all I wanted. Whenever I stepped through the stone archway bearing the carved words Domus Lunae Libri, I was entering another world, a parallel universe. By now, some parts of the world were familiar, the smell of the mossy stone, the musky scent of parchment dating back to the Civil War and beyond, the smoke drifting up from the torches hovering near the carved ceilings. I could smell the damp walls, hear the occasional drip of underground water making its way down to the patterns in the stone floor. But there were other parts that would never be familiar. The darkness at the edges of the stacks, the sections of the library no mortal had ever seen. I wondered how much my mother had seen. We reached the base of the stairs.
"What now?"
Link found his flashlight and aimed it at the column next to him. A menacing stone griffin's head snarled back. He pulled the flashlight away, and it flickered on a fanged gargoyle.
"If this is a library, I'd hate to see a caster prison."
I heard the sound of the flames erupting into light.
"Wait for it."
One by one, the torches surrounding the rotunda burst into flame, and we could see the carved colonnade with rows of fierce mythological creatures, some caster, some mortal, snaking around every pedestal. Link cringed.
"This place is messed up. Just saying."
I touched a woman's face twisted into carved agony in stone flames. Link ran his hand over another face, revealing massive rows of canines.
"Check out the dog. It looks like Boo."
He looked again and realized the fangs were growing out of a man's head. He yanked his hand away. There was a swirl of carved rock that appeared to be made of both stone and smoke. A face emerged from the twists and folds of the column, and it looked familiar. It was hard to tell because there was so much rock around it. The face seemed to be fighting the stone, trying to push its way out toward me. For a second, I thought I saw the lips on the face move, as if it was trying to speak. I backed away.
"What the hell is that?"
"What's what?"
Link stood next to me, staring at the column, which was just a column swirled with curving waves and spirals again. The face had been swallowed back into the pattern, like a head disappearing under the sea's waves.
"The ocean, maybe? Smoke from a fire? Why do you care?"
"Forget it." I couldn't, even if I didn't understand it. I knew that face in the stone. I had seen it somewhere before. This room was eerie, warning that the caster world was a dark place, no matter whose side you were on. Another torch ignited, and the stacks of old books, manuscripts, and caster scrolls revealed themselves. They radiated out from the rotunda in all directions, like spokes on a wheel, and disappeared into the darkness beyond. The last torch burst into flame, and I could see the curving mahogany desk where Marion should have been sitting. It was empty. Though Marion always said the Lunae Libri was a place of old magic, neither dark nor light, without her, the whole library felt pretty dark.
"No one's here."
Link sounded defeated. I grabbed a torch off the wall and handed it to him, taking another for myself.
"They're down here." "How do you know?"
"I just do." I plowed ahead into the stacks as if I knew where I was going. The air was thick with the smell of the bent and crumbling spines of old books and ancient scrolls, the dusty oak shelves straining under the weight of hundreds of years and centuries of words. I held my torch up to the nearest shelf.
"Toes, to cast hair on your maidens. Tongues for binding and casting. Toffee, casts hidden inside. We must be in the T's. Destruction of mortal life, total. That should be in the D's."
Link reached for the book. "Don't touch that. It'll burn your hand." I had learned the hard way from the Book of Moons.
"Shouldn't we at least hide it or something? Behind the toffee one?"
Link had a point. We hadn't gone 10 feet when I heard a laugh, a girl's laugh, unmistakable, echoing off the carved ceilings. You hear that?
What?
Link waved his torch, nearly setting the nearest pile of scrolls on fire.
Watch it! There's no fire escape down here.
We reached a crossroads in the stacks. I heard it again, the almost musical laughter. It was beautiful and familiar, and the sound of it made me feel safe. The world I was standing in a little less foreign.
I think it's a girl laughing.
Maybe it's Marion. She's a girl.
I looked at him like he was insane, and he shrugged.
Sort of.
It's not Marion. I motioned for him to listen, but the sound was gone. We walked in the direction of the laughter, and the passageway turned until we reached another rotunda, similar to the first.
You think it's Lena and Ridley?
I don't know. This way.
I could barely follow the sound, but I knew who it was. Part of me always suspected I could find Lena, no matter where she was. I couldn't explain it. I just knew. It made sense. If our connection was so strong we could dream the same dreams and speak without speaking, why wouldn't I be able to sense where she was? It's like when you drive home from school or someplace you go every day and you remember leaving the parking lot. Then the next thing you know, you're pulling into your driveway, and you don't remember how you got there. She was my destination. I was always on the way to Lena, even when I wasn't. Even when she wasn't on her way to me.
A little farther.
The next twist in the passage revealed a corridor covered with ivy. I held up my torch, and a brass lantern lit itself in the middle of the leaves.
Look!
The light from the lantern illuminated the outline of a doorway, hidden beneath the vines. I felt along the wall until I found the cold, round iron of the latch. It was in the shape of a crescent, a caster moon. I heard it again, laughter. It had to be Lena. There are some things a guy just knows. I knew Elle, and I knew my heart wouldn't lead me astray. My chest was pounding. I pushed open the door, heavy and groaning. It opened into a magnificent study. Along the far wall of the study, a girl was lying on an enormous four-poster bed, scribbling in a tiny red notebook.
Elle!
She looked up, surprised. Only it wasn't Lena. It was Liv. June 15th. Wayward Soul. The first moment hung in the air, silent and awkward. The second erupted into noisy confusion. Link yelled at Liv, who yelled at me, and I yelled at Marion, who waited for us to stop.
What are you doing here? Why did you leave me at the fair? What is she doing here, Aunt Marion?
Come in. Marion pulled the paneled door open and stepped back to let us pass. The door banged shut behind me, and I heard her bolt the lock. I felt a surge of panic or claustrophobia, which didn't make any sense because the room wasn't small. But it felt close. The air was heavy, and I had the feeling that I was standing someplace very private, like a bedroom. Like the laughter, it felt familiar, even if it wasn't. Like the face in the stone.
Where are we?
One question at a time, E.W. I'll answer one of yours, and you'll answer one of mine.
What's Liv doing here?
I don't know why I was angry, but I was. Could anybody in my life be a normal person? Did everyone have to have a secret life?
Sit, please.
Marion gestured to the circular table in the center of the room. Liv looked irritated and got up from her spot on the bed in front of an impossibly lit fireplace, the smoldering fire white and bright instead of orange and burning.
Olivia is here because she is my summer research assistant. Now I have a question for you.
Wait, that's not a real answer. I already knew that.
I was every bit as stubborn as Marion was.
My voice echoed across the chamber, and I noticed an intricate chandelier hanging from the high vaulted ceiling. It was made of some kind of smooth, white-polished horn, or was it bone? The ironwork held long, tapered candles that lit the room with a delicate, flickering light, illuminating some corners while leaving others dark and unexposed. In the shadows of the far corner, I noticed the spindles of a tall, ebony four-poster bed. I had seen a bed exactly like it somewhere before. Everything about today was one monster déjà vu, and it was driving me crazy. Marion sat back in her chair, undeterred. "Ethan, how did you find this place?" What could I say with Liv standing next to me? I thought I heard Lena, sensed her, but my instincts led me to Liv instead. I didn't understand it myself. I looked away. Black wooden bookcases ran from floor to ceiling, crammed with books and objects of curiosity that were obviously the personal collection of someone who had been around the world and back more times than I had been to the Stop and Steal. A collection of antique bottles and vials lined one of the shelves, like in an old apothecary. Another was stacked with books. It reminded me of Amma's room, without the stacks of old newspapers and jars of graveyard dirt. But one book stood out from the others, light and dark, The Origins of Magic. I recognized it, and the bed, and the library, and the immaculate arrangement of beautiful things. This room could only belong to one person, who wasn't even a person. This was Macon's room, wasn't it? Possibly. Link dropped a strange ceremonial dagger he had been playing with. It clattered to the floor, and he tried to put it back on the shelf, flustered. Dead or not, Macon Ravenwood still scared Link plenty. "I'm guessing a caster tunnel connects it directly to his bedroom at Ravenwood." This room was almost a mirror image of his bedroom in Ravenwood, with the exception of the heavy drapes that blocked out the sunlight. "It may." "You brought that book down here because you didn't want me to see it after I had the vision in the archive." Marion answered carefully. "Let's say you're right, and this is Macon's private study, the place where he collected his thoughts. Even so, how did you find us tonight?" I kicked the thick Indian rug under my feet. It was black and white, stitched in a complicated pattern. I didn't want to explain how I found this place. It was confusing, and if I said it, it might be true. But how could it be? How could my instincts lead me to anyone but Lena? Then again, if I didn't tell Marion, I'd probably never get out of this room. So I settled for half of the truth. "I was looking for Lena. She's down here with Ridley and her friend John, and I think she's in trouble. Lena did something today at the fair. Let's just say Ridley was being Ridley, but Lena was being Ridley too. The lollipops might be working overtime." Link was unwrapping a Slim Jim, so he didn't notice me staring him down. I hadn't planned on telling Marion or Liv the details. "We were in the stacks, and I heard a girl laughing. She sounded, I don't know, happy, I guess. I followed her here. I mean, her voice. I can't really explain it." I stole a glance at Liv. I saw the pink flush in her pale skin. She was staring at a particular spot of nothing on the wall. Marion clapped her hands together, the sign of a great discovery. "I'm guessing the laughter was familiar." "Yeah, and you followed it without a thought, more of an instinct." "You could say that." I wasn't sure where this was going, but Marion had that mad scientist look in her eye. "When you're with Lena, can you sometimes speak to her without words?" I nodded. "You mean Kelton?" Liv looked up at me, shocked. "How could a regular mortal possibly know about Kelton?" "That is an excellent question, Olivia. The way the two of them were looking at each other irritated me. One that deserves an answer. Marion walked to shelves, rummaging through Macon's library like she was looking for car keys in her purse. Watching her flip through his books bothered me, even though he wasn't here to see it.
It just happened. We sort of found each other in our heads.
You can read minds and you didn't tell me?
Link stared at me like he just found out I was the Silver Surfer. He rubbed his head nervously.
Hey, man, all that stuff about Lena, I was yanking your chain.
He looked away.
Are you doing it now? You're doing it, aren't you? Dude, get out of my head.
He backed away from me and into the bookshelf.
I can't read your mind, you idiot. Lena and I can hear each other's thoughts sometimes.
Link looked relieved, but he wasn't getting off that easy.
What were you thinking about Lena?
Nothing. I was messing with you.
He pulled a book off the shelf and pretended to look through it. Marion took the book out of Link's hands. There it is, exactly the book I was looking for. She opened the tattered leather volume, flipping through the crackling pages so quickly it was obvious she was looking for something specific. It looked like an old textbook or reference manual.
There. She held the book out to Liv. Does any of this sound familiar?
Liv leaned closer, and they started to turn the pages together, nodding. Marion straightened and took the book from Liv.
Now, how can a regular mortal Celt, Olivia?
He can't, unless he's not a regular mortal, Professor Ashcroft.
They were smiling at me like I was a kid who had taken his first steps, or like someone was about to tell me I had a terminal illness, and the combined effect made me want to bolt.
You mind letting me in on the joke?
It's no joke. Why don't you see for yourself?
Marion handed me the book. I looked at the page. I was right about the textbook part. It was some kind of Castor encyclopedia, with drawings and languages I didn't understand on every page, but some of it was in English.
The Wayward.
I looked up at Marion.
Is that what you think I am?
Keep going.
The Wayward. The one who knows the way. Synonyms. Imperator, explorator, navigo. General, scout, navigator. The one who marks the path.
I looked up, confused. For once, Link wasn't.
So he's like a human compass? As far as superpowers go, that's pretty lame. You're like the Castor equivalent of Aquaman.
Aquaman? Marion didn't read a lot of comics.
He talks to fish.
Link shook his head.
Not exactly X-ray vision. I don't have any superpowers.
Did I? Keep reading. Marion pointed to the page.
Since before the Crusades, we have served. We have had many names and none. Like the whisper in the ear of China's first emperor as he contemplated the Great Wall, or the loyal companion at the side of Scotland's most valiant knight as he toiled for his country's independence. Mortals with great purpose have always had those who guided them, as the lost vessels of Columbus and Vasco da Gama had those who guided them to new worlds. We exist to guide casters whose paths hold great meaning. We are...
I couldn't make sense of the words. Then I heard Liv's voice next to me, as if she had committed the words to memory.
The one who finds what is lost. The one who knows the way. Finish it.
Marion was suddenly serious, as if the words were some kind of prophecy.
We are given to the great for great purpose, to great ends. We are given to the grave for grave purpose, to grave ends.
I closed the book and handed it back to Marion. I didn't want to know any more.
Marion's expression was difficult to read. She turned the book over and over in her hands and looked at Liv.
Do you think? It's possible. There have been others. Not for a Ravenwood, or a Duquesne, for that matter.
But you said it yourself, Professor Ashcroft. Lena's decision carries consequences. If she chooses to go light, all the dark casters in her family will die. And if she chooses to go dark...
Liv didn't finish. We all knew the rest. All the light casters in her family would die.
Wouldn't you say her path holds great meaning?
I didn't like the way this conversation was going, even though I wasn't completely sure where it was headed.
Hello? I'm sitting right here. Wanna clue me in?
Liv spoke slowly, as if I was a kid at the library for a read-aloud.
Ethan, in the caster world, only those with great purpose have a wayward. Waywards don't come along often, maybe once in a century, and never by accident. If you are a wayward, you're here for a reason, a great or terrible purpose, all your own. You're a bridge between worlds for casters and mortals, and whatever you do, you have to be very careful.
I sat down on the bed, and Marion sat next to me.
You have a destiny of your own, like Lena, which means things could become very complicated.
You think these past few months haven't been complicated?
You have no idea of the things I've seen, the things your mother saw.
Marion looked away.
So you think I'm one of those waywards? I'm a human compass or something, like Link said.
It's more than that. Waywards don't just know the way, they are the way. They guide casters along the path they are destined to take, a path they might not otherwise find on their own. You might be the wayward for a Ravenwood or a Duquesne. It's not clear which at the moment.
Liv seemed to know what she was talking about, which didn't make sense. That's what my mind kept going back to as I stumbled over what they were saying.
Aunt Marion, tell her. I can't be one of these waywards. My parents are regular mortals.
Nobody said the obvious, that my mom had been a part of the caster world, like Marion, only in a way no one would ever talk about, at least not to me.
Waywards are mortals, a bridge between the caster world and ours.
Liv reached for another book.
Of course, your mother was hardly what you could call a regular mortal, any more than I am, or Professor Ashcroft.
Olivia! Marion froze.
You don't mean his mother didn't want him to know. I promised, if anything were to happen,
stop.
I slammed the book down on the table.
I'm not in the mood for your rules. Not tonight.
Liv fidgeted with her science experiment of a watch, nervously.
I'm such an idiot.
What do you know about my mother?
I turned on Liv.
Tell me right now.
Marion crumpled into the chair next to me. The pink spots on Liv's cheeks flushed.
I'm so sorry.
She shook her head, looking from Marion to me, helplessly. Marion held up her hand.
Olivia knows all about your mother, Ethan.
I turned to Liv. I knew what she was going to tell me before she said it. The truth had been pushing its way into my mind. Liv knew too much about casters and waywards, and she was here, in the tunnels, standing in Macon's study. If I hadn't been so confused about what they thought I was, I would have realized what Liv was. I don't know why it had taken me this long to see it.
Ethan,
you're one of them, like Aunt Marion and my mom.
Them?
Liv asked.
You're a keeper.
The words made it real, and I was feeling everything and nothing at the same time. My mom, down here in the tunnels with Marion's massive ring of caster keys. My mom with her secret life in this secret world my father and I had never been and could never be part of.
I'm not a keeper. Liv looked embarrassed. Not yet. One day, maybe. I'm training.
Training to be more than the Gatlin County Librarian, which is why you're here, in the middle of nowhere with your fancy scholarship, if there is one, or was that a lie too?
I'm a terrible liar. I do have a scholarship, but it's paid by a society of scholars that far predates Duke University.
Or the Harrow School. She nodded.
Or Harrow.
What about the Ovaltine? Was that even true?
Liv smiled ruefully. I'm from King's Langley, and I do love Ovaltine. But if I'm to be perfectly honest, I've come to prefer Quick since arriving in Gatlin.
Link sat down on the bed, speechless. I don't understand a word she's saying.
Liv turned the pages of the book until a timeline of keepers appeared. My mom's name stared back at me. Professor Ashcroft is right. I studied Lila Evers Waite. Your mother was a brilliant keeper, a tremendous writer. It's part of my coursework to read the notes left by the keepers who have come before me.
Notes? My mom had notes Liv had seen and I hadn't?
I resisted the urge to punch a hole through the wall.
Why? So you don't make the mistakes they made? So you don't end up dead in an accident nobody saw and no one can explain? So you don't leave your family behind, wondering about your secret life and why you never told them about it?
The two pink spots appeared on Liv's cheeks again. I was getting used to them.
So I can continue their work and keep their voices alive. So one day, when I become a keeper, I'll know how to safeguard the Caster Archive. The Lunae Libri, the scrolls, the records of the Casters themselves. That isn't possible without the voices of the keepers who came before me.
Why not?
Because they're my teachers. I learn from their experiences, the knowledge they gathered while they were keepers. Everything is connected, and without their records, I can't make sense of the things I discover myself.
I shook my head. I don't understand.
You don't understand? What the hell are we even talking about?
Link spoke up from the bed. Marion put her hand on my shoulder.
The voice you heard, the laughter from the hall, I imagine it was your mother. Lila led you here, most likely because she wanted us to have this conversation, so you would understand your purpose, and Lena's or Macon's, because you're bound to one of their houses and one of their destinies. I just don't know whose, yet.
I thought about the face in the column, the laughter and the feeling of deja vu in Macon's room.
Was it my mom?
I'd been waiting months for a sign from her, since the afternoon in the study when Lena and I found the message in the books.
Was she finally trying to contact me now?
What if she wasn't? I realized something else.
If I am one of these waywards, and I'm not saying I'm buying any of this, then I can find Lena, right? I'm supposed to take care of her because I'm her compass, or whatever.
We don't know that for sure. You're bound to someone, but we don't know who. I pushed back the chair and walked over to the bookcase. Macon's book sat on the edge of the shelf. I bet I know someone who does. I reached for it.
Ethan, stop!
Marion shouted. My fingers barely scraped the cover when I felt the floor give way into the nothingness of another world. At the last second, a hand grabbed mine.
Take me with you, Ethan. Liv, no!
A girl with long brown hair clung desperately to a tall boy, her face buried in his chest. The branches of a huge oak reached down around them, creating the impression they were alone instead of a few yards away from clusters of Duke University's ivy-covered buildings. He cradled her tear-stained face gently in his hands. Do you think this is easy for me? I love you, Jane, and I know I'll never feel this way about anyone again. But we don't have a choice. You knew there would come a time when we would have to say goodbye. Jane lifted her chin, resolute. There are always choices, Macon. Not in this situation. Not a choice that wouldn't put you in danger. But your mother said there might be a way. What about the prophecy? Macon slammed his palm against the tree, frustrated. Damn it, Jane. That's an old wives' tale. There's no way it doesn't end with you dead. So we can't be together physically. I don't care about that. We can still be together. That's all that matters. Macon pulled away, his face twisted in pain. Once I change, I'll be dangerous, a blood incubus. They thirst for blood. And my father says I will be one of them, like he is, and his father before him, like all the men in my family, as far back as my great-great-great-grandfather Abraham. Grandfather Abraham? The one who believed the greatest sin imaginable was for a supernatural to fall in love with a mortal? To taint the supernatural bloodlines? And you can't trust your father. He feels the same way. He wants to keep us apart so you'll return to Gatlin, that god-awful town, and creep around underground like your brother, like a monster. It's too late. I can already feel the transformation. I stay up all night listening to the thoughts of mortals, hungering. Soon I'll be hungering for more than their thoughts. Already it feels like my body can't hold what's inside me, as if the beast might literally burst free. Jane turned away, her eyes welling up with tears again. But Macon wasn't going to let her ignore him this time. He loved her. And because he loved her, he had to make her understand why they couldn't be together. Even standing here, the light is beginning to burn through my skin. I can feel the heat of the sun with such intensity all the time now. I'm changing already, and it will only get worse. Jane buried her face in her hands, sobbing. You're saying this to scare me. Because you don't want to find a way. Macon grabbed Jane's shoulders, forcing her to look at him. You're right. I am trying to scare you. Do you know what my brother did to his mortal girlfriend after the transformation? Macon paused. He ripped her apart. Without warning, Macon's head jerked back, his golden yellow eyes shining around strange black pupils like the eclipse of twin suns. He turned his head away from Jane. Don't ever forget, Ethan. Things are never as they seem.
I opened my eyes, but I couldn't see anything until the fog lifted. The vaulted ceiling of the study came into focus.
That was creepy, man. Like the Exorcist creepy.
Link was shaking his head. I held out my arm and he pulled me up. My heart was still pounding, and I tried not to look at Liv. I had never shared a vision with anyone except Lena and Marion, and I wasn't too comfortable doing it now. Every time I looked at her, all I could think about was the moment I walked into this room. The moment I thought she was Lena. Liv sat up, groggy.
You told me about the visions, Professor Ashcroft, but I had no idea they were so physical.
You shouldn't have done that. Felt like I was betraying Macon by bringing Liv into his private life.
Why not?
She rubbed her eyes, trying to readjust. Maybe you weren't supposed to see it.
What I see in a vision is totally different from what you see. You're not a keeper.
No offense. But you have no training.
Why do you say no offense when you're planning to offend me?
Enough. Marion looked at us expectantly. What happened? But Liv was right. I didn't understand what the vision meant. except that incubuses couldn't be with mortals any more than casters could. Macon was there with a girl, and he was talking about becoming a blood incubus. Liv looked smug. Macon was going through the transformation. He appeared to be in a very vulnerable state. I don't know why the vision showed us that particular moment, but it must be significant. Are you sure you weren't seeing hunting, not Macon? Marion asked. No, we said, our voices overlapping. I looked at Liv. Macon wasn't like hunting. Liv thought for a moment, then reached for the notebook on the bed. She scribbled something and snapped it shut. Great. Another girl with a notebook.
You know what? You're the experts. I'm going to let you two figure this one out. I'm going to find Lena before Ridley and her friend convince her to do something she'll regret.
Are you suggesting Lena is under Ridley's influence? That's not possible, Ethan. Lena's a natural. A siren can't control her. Marion dismissed the idea. But she didn't know about John Breed.
What if Ridley had help?
What sort of help?
An incubus who can walk around in the daylight, or a caster with Macon's strength and the ability to travel. I'm not sure which.
It wasn't the best explanation, but I didn't know what John Breed really was. Ethan, you must be mistaken. There's no record of an incubus or a caster with those abilities.
Marion was already pulling a book from the shelves. There is now. His name is John Breed.
If Marion didn't know what John was, we weren't going to find the answer in one of those books.
If what you're describing is accurate, and I find it hard to believe that it could be, I'm not sure what he might be capable of.
I looked at Link. He was twisting the chain on his wallet. We were thinking the same thing.
I have to find Lena.
I didn't wait for a response. Link unlocked the door. Marion stood up.
You can't go after her. It's too dangerous. There are casters and creatures of unfathomable power in those tunnels. You've only been down here once before, and the sections you've seen are passageways compared to the larger tunnels. They're like another world.
I didn't need permission. My mom may have led me here, but she was still gone.
You can't stop me because you can't get involved, right? All you can do is sit there and watch me screw things up and write about it so someone like Liv can study it later.
You don't know what you'll find, and when you find it, I won't be able to help you. It didn't matter. I was at the door by the time Marion finished. Liv was following me.
I'm going, Professor Ashcroft. I'll make sure nothing happens to them.
Marion moved to the doorway.
Olivia, this isn't your place.
I know, but they'll need me.
You cannot change what is to be. You have to stay out of it. No matter how much it pains you, a keeper's role is only to record and bear witness, not to change what unfolds.
You're like a hall cop,
Link grinned.
Like Fatty.
Liv's eyes narrowed. They must have truant officers in England, too.
You don't need to explain the order of things to me, Professor Ashcroft. I've studied it since my K levels. But how can I witness what I'm never allowed to see?
You can read about it in the caster scrolls, like the rest of us.
I can. The 16th moon, the claiming that could have broken the Duquesne curse. Could you have read about any of that in a scroll?
Liv glanced at her moon watch.
There's something happening. This supernatural with unprecedented power, Ethan's visions, and there are scientific anomalies, subtle changes I've picked up on my selenometer.
Subtle as in non-existent. I recognized a scam when I saw one. Olivia Durand was as trapped as the rest of us, and we were her ticket out. She wasn't worried about Link and me in the tunnels. She wanted to have a life, like another girl I knew not too long ago. Remember. The door closed before Marion could finish, and we were gone. June 15th. Exile. The door slammed behind us. Liv straightened her warm